happiness that depends on what you acquire or become is only conditional happiness, not true happiness. True happiness means no matter what happens, it's all right. If you become ill, just be ill. When it's time to die, just die. Today, the doorbell rang this morning and I went to answer it. Plumber was coming because we have a hole or had some sort of leak in our bathtub. We weren't sure what was going on, but it was draining into the basement. And so I went to answer the door at the doorbell and opened it. And there he and his understudy were standing, both of them looking up into the sky. And he kind of turned to me and he said, "Oh, we like looking at the sky." And so I stepped out on the porch with him and I looked up at the sky with them and he started pointing out what was going on. There were different layers to the clouds and it was mostly blue sky, but way at the top there were some clouds that appeared to be pretty still. And then another layer down, there was a set of clouds that was wisping in what appeared to be the opposite direction at a very fast clip. And he said, "It's a hobby." And then he came inside and he started the job. And I thought about how inspiring that was to me, that, you know, rather than thinking about how he just needed to get through this job to earn his paycheck and get through the next job. And, you know, he had a whole bunch of people who were waiting on him because of the storms recently and everything. There he was standing on the porch checking out the clouds and basically inviting me to join him. Probably many of us have heard the story about the man, woman, walking in the jungle. And they see a tiger approaching and start running in the other direction. And the tiger is getting closer and closer, and they're at a cliff's edge. So they climb down over the cliff's edge. And the story's told a few different ways. In one iteration, they hang on to a vine. And in another, they hang on to a branch that's sort of sticking out and are hanging there. And then look down and notice that there's a tiger below, too. So there's one above, there's one below, there's no escape. And then they notice that the vine or the branch is beginning to break. And examining these circumstances, they happen to notice that also there's a tiny little patch of shrub growing there, and there's a strawberry. And so this person picks the strawberry, and it's warm in the sunshine, and they bite into it. Tonight, I want to talk about some words that you may have heard before if you've chanted Orioki, done Orioki, formal Orioki practice in a sesshin where you lay out your bowls and all these things. And there's a moment, a period in that chant where they talk about, where we chant together about Sambo, well, actually, I'll go in order. Nirmanakaya, Dharmakaya, and Sambhogakaya. Nirmanakaya, I'm going to relate it to our Zen tradition, essentially refers to what we might call the Buddha body, and actually refers to the world of form, Buddha living in history, and more broadly and symbolically, you, me, the storied lives that we live of having, you know, work to do and things to take care of and people we love and people who make us angry and all the different ways that we conceptualize the world. we might think of as nirmanakaya. And the second sort of body that we talk about, the kayas here, is dharmakaya. And dharmakaya refers to the emptiness of form. Now, I don't like to describe it as emptiness alone per se, although we could. We could just say dharmakaya means emptiness. Emptiness meaning no thing. But this no thing is precisely the world that we live in. The world of form is empty of any fixed innate substance. And I've given talks about both of these aspects before. We've talked about emptiness and form at great length in our Sangha, maybe too much. But if you're interested, you can check out older talks, maybe talks about the Heart Sutra, things like that, that are posted. But today what I want to do is I want to focus on the third, Sambhogakaya. And Sambhogakaya is what we might describe as the non-dual appreciation body. The appreciation body. In our tradition, we talk quite a bit about suffering and how we meet it, and the importance of not using our practice as a kind of spiritual bypass where we're hoping to just stop being human beings, stop living in the world of form altogether. We imagine that emptiness is something different, that we can escape into it and, you know, never feel sadness or pain or loss or grief or anger or whatever it may be. You know, we imagine that we'll just kind of rise above all these things, enter nirvana, like nirvana is a separate place. But, you know, we practice for many, many years, and we may begin to realize that we only find emptiness right here, this very moment. We only find nirvana right here in the midst of samsara. In fact, they are not two separate things. And the more deeply we realize the emptiness of form, if you will, the more naturally, I think, in some sense, this appreciation body of life just as it is, intimacy with this world just as it is, becomes clearer to us. Sambhogakaya is sometimes described a little bit like a dream, this appreciation body. We've talked here about the Diamond Sutra as well. The Diamond Sutra describes life as a dream. So here we have some kind of connections in the language. Some language that kind of points beyond this duality that we can sometimes get stuck in trying to sort out emptiness and form and what their relationship is. And, you know, we can really get caught up in our heads in this practice. And the other thing is that because the Four Noble Truths really do emphasize that life includes suffering, and we have our five remembrances which point to us, point out to us the way that everything is impermanent and we lose everybody and everything we love and we get sick and we die, and we chant this every week. You know, sometimes Buddhism can feel like wonderful because it's acknowledging these things that are so often not talked about in the world. And so it can be a real relief. But it can also potentially seem kind of negative. Gosh, this practice just seems about, you know, it's no escape and life is suffering and that's it, and then you die. And of course, that would be just another story that we're telling. We all probably have, in certain moments in our lives and in our life, practice life. As we've sat together, perhaps if you've sat alone, been quite touched by the intimacy of the moment. Maybe listening to the crickets, really feeling their presence in your heart, in your own mind, this remarkable non-separation. Our awareness, each of us, our awareness extending out infinitely. Who can measure the end of awareness? And where is this awareness? Is it in me? Is it outside of me? The mind raises all these dualistic questions, and in our practice, you know, we just let those thoughts come and go and sink into this non-dual intimacy that's ever present. This emptiness. And this is the appreciation body manifesting for us. Just this. Nowhere else we have to look. Nothing else we have to do or accomplish. You know, just like that person hanging off the cliff edge. In the storied mind, in the relative sense of things, our lives are bookended in some way by non-existence. But we have this moment, don't we? Now, it's not anything that we can keep. That's its emptiness showing itself again. So when we try to grasp it, we can't, and maybe we suffer for that. But if we can let go of that grasp a little bit, we've been talking about opening the hand of thought, or as Uchiyama originally wrote it, a little bit more of an accurate translation, releasing the grip of thought. Even the thought, oh, I really want to hold on to this. To this feeling I have tonight. Then we begin to enter into the realm of entrusting. Entrusting that reality continues to arise. In these many different forms that are beyond conception. Each moment, both dying and being born in the very same moment. Life and death, not something to worry about in the past and future. All of it happening right here. This possibility that our practice is about receiving life just exactly as it is. Quite a thing here. If you become ill, just be ill. When it's time to die, just die. Face any situation and accept it. Unless you accept your present circumstances, happiness cannot be attained. This does not seem like the kind of happiness that is about like being in a giddy mood. To me, this is the kind of happiness that accepts even sadness and heartbreak and loss. I don't remember what I was watching, some show recently, and someone said, it was someone who had never cried before. This will come back to me in a second, but... And they were crying and they said, it was Barbie. By the way, good movie, I recommend it. Very Buddhist, you'll see. And they said, you know, she'd never cried before. And she cried and she said, I don't remember the words precisely. Someone can fill us in the Dharma discussion. But it was something like, it ached, but it felt good. Now there's someone just accepting their circumstances. There is real irony in all of this. We create these dualities, good, bad, but when we talk about the bardo, I don't know how many of you know of this, but this period that's described, quote, after death. Well, we're all in the bardo already. The space in between all the polarities of life and death, of existence and non-existence, emptiness and form, nirvana, samsara. Good and bad. It's just life as it is, quite beyond conception, manifesting and always available here. So our practice is, I think, in many ways pretty simple. We sit up, we pay attention, perhaps follow the breath, be embodied, be awake. What is, whatever is the Dharma we seek. And this is how we come to learn to appreciate this fleeting life. Thank you.